Matthew chapter 5. Now let's go through all 48 verses word by word, okay? How much time do we have? We don't have enough time. So one of the things as we look at Matthew chapter 5 that I think it's important for us to get, and I don't think most people get this. In fact, even the commentary, I don't think that most people get what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 5. Because if you look at, how many of you have figured out that some people are born, well, all people are born with certain traits. And it doesn't matter how hard you try, you can't change that ingrained personality. There's just some things that we're born with. And I'm not talking about how pretty you are. I'm talking about, you know, your qualities. I know that our upbringing, our training, our environment has a lot of impact on how we turn out, on what we end up becoming. But Jesus describes some people here. Now, whether it be for their ingrained qualities or their born qualities or for qualities that they've learned, it's important for us to understand this is who they are, okay? It's not so much that he's telling us that we need to be, for instance, in verse 3, poor in spirit, right? You say, blessed are the poor in spirit. Well, what does that really mean? It means, I don't know if you've ever met somebody, but some people are just nervous. You ever met somebody like that? They're just, the word, it actually means trembling. So poor in spirit. So some people are just not outgoing, gregarious, they're quiet, isolating people. Do whatever you want. You're not going to change that. You can beg them and try to get them, come out of the house, let's go shopping, let's go do something. They're not public people. They're private, quiet, hidden people. Now, when they are out and about, what we see about them is they are kind of uneasy about their surroundings, about being around people. And so he says here, blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So there's a positive quality. There's a positive outlook, a positive outcome. So it's not just, it's not a punishment. We don't expect that they're going to have a life sentence for being this way. He wants them to know theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Verse 4, blessed are they that mourn. How many of you desire to mourn? He's not telling us, hey, you need to cry. That's not what he's saying. But you ever notice that some people are more sensitive than others? We all grieve our own way. Some people, they accept what it is. And again, some of that's ingrained. Some of that is developed. But they don't cry. They don't shed a tear. They accept it for what it is and, you know, they say a few words and they move on. Other people, you know, in stages, but it eventually gets to the point where it's devastating. Something happens to them and they're devastated. You know, they almost can't function anymore. And here he says, they that mourn. But understand this, and I believe the Sunday school writer said this too. We all mourn at some point in our lives, but we mourn differently. And that's important. We all have our own way. And blessed are they that mourn, they shall be comforted. Verse 5, blessed are the meek. Again, have you ever met somebody who wasn't meek and they became meek? Well, I'll tell you this. Through the tragedies of life, we can become more meek, right? Y'all agree with this? Y'all still awake? Okay. Do this every once in a while and I won't notice it. You know this. So meekness is a quality with people, you know, that we do experience in as we develop, as we grow, we become more sensitive. We become more humble. We become, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the older I get, and I'm not old at all, but the older I get, the less I talk. How many of you notice that about yourself? The less you have to say, except Brother Bill, okay? But the older I get, and maybe it's not an age thing. Maybe it is just an experience thing. Maybe it's just, you know, part of the development. But I notice the less I have to say, I'm not a whole lot of fun to be around because I don't have a whole lot to say. I don't talk about just anything, just talk to be talking. That's not me. Now, some people do, and that's fine. But when he talks about meekness, again, that humble spirit, and he says, they shall inherit the earth. But is Jesus telling us that we need to be poor in spirit, that we need to mourn, and that we need to be meek? You see? And I think that a lot of times we hear what he's saying, and we think he's telling us we need to be this way to earn this, inherit the earth, and theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is when we see people, instead of judging them and trying to get everybody to be the same. That was one of my primary complaints when I went to college at the seminary, was that they wanted us all to be the same. They wanted all these people to come from around the state and around the world to come to this college, and they wanted to, you know, basically cookie cut, and everybody comes out the same type of preacher. It doesn't work that way. So we can't expect everybody to be like us. And what kind of world would it be if everybody was like us, like you? Right, if we were all the same, it wouldn't be a whole lot of fun, would it? So, in fact, we'd probably argue all the time. But inherit this just, it's a big, that's a great question. Is there a good answer to it? I think that meekness gets us further in life, you know, so that we don't have to, I think that sometimes we think that we've got to be loud to get ahead. Not so. Okay. But we don't have to be loud and gregarious, and you don't necessarily have to even be outgoing to gain, to receive. Verse 6. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Have you ever met anybody that wasn't curious at all? Had no, was not inquisitive at all? Now, we've got one that asks a bazillion questions. When I drive him to school, when I would drive him to school, and when I pick him up and bring him home, I can expect, you know, question after question after question after question after question after question after question. And I would have to be, I would have to have my Google or my encyclopedia out to be able to answer these questions, because they're not questions like, you know, well, why does it rain? I know the answer to that. But they're questions like, what day did Germany fall? You know, what day did the Soviet Union fall? All these kind of historical questions and wanting a specific date. But he's curious, and that's a good thing. And what Jesus is saying here is what? Blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness. You ever met somebody who got saved and they were satisfied? They got saved and that was all. But there are people who, even before they get saved, they want to understand the book. They want to understand the story. They want to understand who God is. And by the way, sometimes that keeps people from getting saved because they're so curious and their brain is made that way. They're so curious about every detail that they've got to understand. How can a God, creator, send his son to be born on the earth and to die for all of us, even though we're not going to be perfect after we're saved? That we're going to be ungrateful, even, and take for granted our salvation. And so those questions like that, that can drown you because there's no good answer. That is the mystery of the gospel. How can a perfect, righteous, holy God love a sinner like me? And so curiosity can go both ways. But look at what he says. They do hunger and thirst after righteousness. And here's what it says. They shall be filled. Guys, we look into the Word. We dig in the Word. If you're really curious, we're going to find the answers. A lot of those questions that are asked, I love it when they ask Bible questions. I can answer those. But when we're trying to uncover it and really even go all the way back to Genesis and try to understand, well, about the dinosaurs and about, they said cavemen, that kind of stuff. How can all of this work out? They're very curious, and the answers are all here. If we hunger and thirst after righteousness, if we truly want the answer, it's available. Unless the question is not appropriate. But the curiosity, and that's what he says in verse 6. Verse 7, blessed are the merciful. Now, I would say that if we look at verse number 5 and say, well, does Jesus want us to be meek? Sure. Is that a quality we all have? No. Does he want us to hunger and thirst after righteousness? I would say that's a good quality. Is it a quality we all have? No. Verse number 7, blessed are the merciful. Is that a quality we all have? It's really not. But is it one we should have? Certainly. We should. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And remember, Jesus said when it comes to this, if we don't forgive our brother, whom we can see, how can we expect God's forgiveness, who we can't see? So when it comes to the mercy, we need to be full of mercy. And again, this is a quality that not everybody carries. Some people, it's easy. They forgive, they forget, they move on. They don't carry a grudge. Other people want to forgive, but can't. How many of you have ever been through that? You want to forgive somebody, you want to get over it, but it just won't go away. But he says here, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Why? Because we reap what we sow. And he tells us that in another place. We will reap what we sow. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I know there's a song, I don't remember the name of it, but and it's not a Christian song necessarily, but he said, I saw God today. I think that's the name of it. I saw God today. How many of us can see a sunset or a sunrise or any kind of natural setting or look up at the stars and see the handiwork of God? And by the way, the Bible says that. It's his handiwork. So we can see God in everything we do. And when we see people that pure in heart, we can see God working in people. Others don't see it. But that pure in heart, that desire to be like God, that desire to serve God, that desire, that I don't want to say innocence, because innocence sometimes brings along the idea of being naive, but that innocence of that purity of heart, loving, caring, interested, just you are who you are, that transparency, they shall see God. Verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers. Again, is this a quality we want to have? Sure it is. Is everybody good at that? No. Some people can walk into the middle of a fight and turn it into a war. But others can walk into a room and balance it out. And that peacemaker, you know, being able to carry that right, the right tone, being able to say the right things, being able to talk to the right person at the right time. Peacemakers, that's a high quality. They shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness. Is this something we desire? To be persecuted. You understand the difference between persecuted and prosecuted. Prosecuted is court. Persecuted is anybody attacking you. For righteousness' sake, again, for the right reasons, for doing the right thing. Theirs is, again, the kingdom of heaven, just as he says in verse number 3. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And that kingdom of heaven, again, is the government, the idea of rulership of heaven. The control of heaven. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And when Jesus preached that, he said, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. What does that mean? That means the authority of heaven is now on earth. How many of you wish to or would like to be able to carry, and you don't have to raise your hand, the authority of heaven? The authority of heaven. So that when you speak, things happen. How about that? We've got to watch what we say then, huh? Verse 11, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely, that's important, for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. So, again, as we understand this to be qualities and not goals, I think it helps to kind of balance our understanding of what Jesus was teaching. Everybody's different. Everybody is, you know, we're not able all to do the same things. No matter how hard we train. How many of you ever took piano class? Anybody? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, How many of you can play the piano? Two. All right. How many? Any other instruments? Guitars? Just in case, just be prepared. Right? So guitar, same thing. I took guitar, I took piano. We work on these things, but I just couldn't get it. Now, somebody will come along and say, but Pastor, if you would just applied yourself, if you would have worked harder, if you would have been more interested, if you really wanted it. Let me tell you something. God gifts some people. And others, he says, preach. We're not all the same. We can't all do the same thing. That's what, when the pastor's preaching and we're hearing things, sometimes we take that list of the things that he tells us we should be doing and we're like, I can't do that. I've tried that. I can't do that. I've worked on that. I can't do that. And so we feel like I'm trapped now. Now I'm defeated. No, we're all different. So when things are being preached, when things are being said, as Jesus is sitting here talking about all these things, and they're listening to him, they're walking away going, well, that doesn't match me. That's okay. That's not who you are. And that's okay. And that's what he's teaching them, which slot they fall into. Now, when he goes to verse 13, this is something that applies to all of us. So when Jesus is preaching, when we're studying the Bible, when we're drawing from the Bible, understand there are some things that are generally for all of us, and there are some things that are specific and unique. And as we see that here. Verse 13, ye are the salt of the earth. Now, give me another word for salt here. Okay, preservation. That was one of the qualities that salt has, one of the things that salt does. Okay, flavor. Okay. What's that? Okay. Some people are like that. That's true. Understand that salt here represents treasure. Now, is he talking about the flavor, the extraordinary quality of salt? Okay, that's part of it. Is he talking about its preservation quality, that we're here to save? Yeah, that's part of it. But salt is used also here as money. It's for trade. That's how they paid the soldiers. They paid them with salt. And so when he talks about salt here, he's not just talking about the qualities, the characteristics that it preserves, that it gives, that it adds a certain flair or flavor to it. But he's saying, ye are the treasure, the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor. Now, what do you think about salt? What is it worth? Y'all ever see that tuna? You go down to the store and you buy a little can of tuna. How much is that? $1.99? Not anymore? $2? $4? I'm not on a Price is Right, but so what's that? Okay, $2.39 for a can of tuna. All right. Y'all ever see that tuna that they have in Japan that they catch over there and it's like $400 a pound? Y'all ever see that? Right. Yeah, there's a TV show about it, but they've got documentaries on it. Now, do you think that $400 a pound is what they put in the can? Jesus is saying, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its qualities, preservation, flavor, it's still salt. It's just not very flavorful. It's still salt. It's just not, it's old. It's stale, if you will. You ever had stale salt? Well, not something you really think about. But here he says, if it's lost its savor. If it's lost its savor. So, we are that treasure, but that treasure can lose its value. Does that make sense? You following it so far? So that salt has lost its savor. If the salt loses its savor, is it still treasure? It's still salt, but it's worthless. And if it's worthless, see, wherewith shall it be salted? How is it going to get, how is it going to regain the quality that it lost? If the church, guys, We're the ones to bring the gospel to the world. We are the ones that are supposed to have enthusiasm. Again, in theos, God in us, enthusiasm. We're supposed to have God in us and that charisma, right? We're supposed to be the ones excited. Today is the most exciting day for the Christian. Today. I mean, I know that we're not getting any presents. Well, some people do. We don't get presents on Easter like we do on Christmas. Today is the pinnacle. This is the top day in the Christian calendar. This is it. We ought to be the most excited. We ought to be the most engaged. This ought to restart us and revive us and get us back on our track in faith today. But if we don't have it to give it to the world, who's going to give it to us? That's what he's saying. If we're not the inspiration for the world, if we've lost inspiration, what is inspiration? The breath of God, inspire. Inspiration. If we've lost the breath of God, the anointing, where are we going to get it? Because this is the filling station right here. And if we don't have it to offer to the world, who's going to refill us? That's what he's saying. It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out, to be trodden underfoot. In other words, this valuable salt that was given to soldiers as pay because it was so valuable and has so many different uses has lost its qualities that made it valuable, then it's no good and we can fill potholes with it. Because that's what they did. Just throw it in the street, Brother Ronnie. Absolutely. That's right. If they find nothing better here or in us than what they've already got or what they can find anywhere else. Now, understand, and let me kind of throw this out here. How many of you went to another church or visited another church while you were looking to join a church before you found this church? Okay. Right? So why this one? Okay. There's something different about it. Something different. Maybe we're the only ones that let you in the door. there's a difference, right? There's some kind of a difference. There needs to be some kind of a difference. When people walk in, there should be that friendliness, that welcoming. But there should also be that presence of God in the room. You know, a presence of God on our faces, right? There ought to be something different in us. If the salt has lost its savor, it's good for nothing but to fill potholes. And I don't know about you, and the way he phrased it here, they're good for nothing but to be trodden underfoot, that's even a greater explanation than just to say filling potholes. Because, guys, what will happen to the church if the church doesn't stand up? What has happened to the church in the last 50 years as we've refused to take a stand, as we've refused to push back, and then even more recently in, you know, the last couple of decades, as we refuse to push back, we won't take a stand. What's happened? We've been walked on. So he says, but if there's no value, if there's nothing different, if the qualities are lost, it's not good for anything but to be walked on. Powerful. Then verse 14, he says, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. So light indicates what? Oh, okay, but the contrast of light is dark. So we are the light, And how do you know that that light is even there? Right? Because it shines. Does it shine brighter in darkness or does it shine brighter in light? In the darkness. How many of you looked out this morning when you got up and looked at all the stars in the sky? No. I mean like y'all want to go outside right now and look at all the stars? Why not? They're out there. They're out there. You see? They're out there. But the light keeps us from seeing those stars that are so far out there. Those bright lights. So far out there. But at night when it's dark, we see them. So we, in a dark world, I know that we complain about what's going on in our world right now. This is the time to shine. This is the time to show the world who Jesus is by the way we carry ourselves, by the way we talk, by the things we do, by the things we don't say, and the things that we don't do, to be the light. And he says, a city set on a hill cannot be hid. If we're really doing it, people are going to notice it. If there's really a difference, people are going to notice it. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel. Why did Jesus give us the light? By the way, when we talk about light, how does that light shine brighter in us? As we grow closer to God. Right? Closer to God. Don't hide it, but put it on a candlestick. For all that are in the house, the idea of the church is not to be the church inside these walls. There may be today, maybe, two or three, four or five people who walk in this building who don't know Jesus Christ as their Savior today. Maybe. Maybe there'll be more. Maybe not as many. But they walk in this room and they don't have Jesus and they come in here, maybe they'll hear the gospel and respond to the gospel because of the light that they see. Is that the idea? That's the idea for today. But when we leave this building, all those lights go out there. And that's where it happens. We don't light it and hide it inside the church building. We take it out there and live. Put it on a candlestick, he says, that it can light up the whole room. And give light to all that are in the house. Verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now, what's interesting as we move on to verse 17 is the day, the occasion in which we read it. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to what? To fulfill, to satisfy it. As we talk about Easter, we talk about the crucifixion and the life of Jesus. And he's killed. He's crucified in a brutal death. Betrayed by a member of his staff, by a member of the church, but not just a member of the church, a member of the staff of the church. And he's betrayed. And sold into the hands of the soldiers in a mock trial, and he's crucified. Why did that happen? Was it Judas's fault? Part of the plan. Everything was part of the plan. Why? To satisfy the Old Testament, to satisfy the law and the prophets, to fulfill it. When the idea that he was resurrected, that he was awake, that he was no longer dead, no longer in the belly of the earth, no longer in hell. I say hell, but you know I'm talking about Abraham's bosom. He's no longer there on the evening of Saturday, which is the beginning of the first day of the week. Okay, you understand that? So, as he's resurrected, all of that plays into the schedule of the sacrifice. It all plays in to the worship of the Old Testament. It all works together. Verse number 18. Verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth shall pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Again, as we look at the Old Testament, he says not one part will fall out until it's fulfilled. In other words, when it comes to the crucifixion, when it comes to the resurrection, every step was ordered. Every step had to fulfill a part of the Old Testament. He couldn't miss a thing. As we look at Passover, they were to take that lamb. They were to bring it in the house. They were to take care of it in the home as one of their own. Then they were to slay that lamb. Then they were to cook that lamb. And it had to be cooked a certain way. You know, normally we don't cook everything together, but that's what the Lord commanded. And they had to put the blood on the doorpost. Well, what if they decided we're going to put it on the sides, but we're not going to put it on the lintel? Right? The blood wasn't applied the way it's supposed to be. So they couldn't miss any part of what was ordered. It had to be done right. And that's what he's saying here. One jot, one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. When was it fulfilled? When he said it is finished, it was fulfilled. And of course we say the resurrection, that's when it was celebrated. But it was fulfilled when he said it is finished. It was settled. Whosoever shall break one of the least commandments and teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So what are we warned here? That we are to obey the word of God. And if we teach others, oh, you don't have to worry about that part. He said, that's going to hurt you. That's going to hurt you. And yet today, we see a whole lot of people, a whole lot of people who consider themselves Christians or religious, and they take whole parts of the Bible and they say, well, that doesn't really matter and that doesn't really count and that's not. He said, that's not going to work. Verse 20. I say to you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Why is this so important? Because these people were trying to be like the scribes and Pharisees. How many of you would say in your life you've had or you do have role models? Somebody you looked up to, somebody said, if I could be like that person, I'll be all right. The role models were the scribes and the Pharisees. And they were looking up to them. They thought they were just everything. Well, if I could be like that, I'll be good. And Jesus comes along and he says, no, you've got the wrong role models. You've got to exceed their righteousness. They saw them as being holy and righteous. He says, no, you've got to exceed that. You've got to do better than that. You've heard that it was said of old time, thou shalt not kill. Verse 22, I say to you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. Wow. We thought the idea of fulfilling the law was to make it easier, right? Does it sound like he made it easier? What he did is he drove it farther. He said to us, I don't just want you not to kill him. I want you not to want to kill him. I want you not to think about killing him. I want you not even to be angry with him. Now, that's a high calling, isn't it? To never be angry with somebody. But that's the goal. And then he says, if you call him empty or raka, or even fool, you'll be in danger of hellfire. So calling names, hating them, being angry with them. In verse number 23, if thou bring thy gift to the altar and there rememberest that thy brother has aught against thee, unsettled conflict, problems that have not been resolved, leave there thy gift before the altar, go thy way, first be reconciled to thy brother, then come and offer thy gift. Now hold on just a second. How many of us have tried to reconcile with someone unsuccessfully? Because they are going to hold a grudge. And there's nothing you can do to receive their forgiveness, to be reconciled. So It's not always possible, not because of our effort, but because of the other person. So the idea, though, is to make sure that we've done all we can do to make it better, to make it, to heal the relationship, to be reconciled. Verse 25, look, and as he's talking about these things, he's moving through it. He's talking to a crowd of people. I remember the first time I preached, it was a 45-minute sermon. I hear preachers say, I got up and preached my first time. It was 7 minutes, including four verses of Just As I Am. Not me. I thought that was probably the only chance I was going to get, and I let her fly. I loaded both barrels, and I just knew, get up and preach. So after 45 minutes, I tell them everything I knew and really trying to get them to respond to the Lord, I was done. Jesus here has a crowd of people. As we look at the things that he talks about, he's talking about a lot of different stuff, isn't he? He's covering a lot of ground. It may be the only time some of those people ever heard him preach. So how could he hold back? He had to give them both barrels, as we say. Verse 25, agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way. With him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. He says, try to solve the problems between the two of you before anybody else is brought into it. That's good, isn't it? We need to solve it between the two of us before anybody else is brought into it. That's why social media can be so damaging, because people get on there and they blast their spouse, or they blast their boss, or they blast their friend. And then, does that solve anything? All it does is bring more people in. And so, he says, solve it between the two of you. Try to make it work. Try to come to an agreement before you get to the point where a third party becomes involved, especially the law. Verse number 27, you've heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say to you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. So he says, we've got to solve the heart problem. Murder is not a gun problem. Violence is not a gun problem. It's not a matter of weapons. It's a matter of the heart. I don't know if you've ever been around prisons, but you know people get killed in prison. Inmates get killed by other inmates in prison. Not with guns, with whatever kind of weapon they can come up with. You know why? Because it's not a matter of weapons, it's a matter of the heart. And so it's true not only of murder, but also of lust. Look, all these things that we say, well, we don't need that, you're right. But it's a matter of the heart. It's the heart. We've got to solve the heart problem. We're working on symptoms. We need to be working on hearts. That's the purpose of the church. He goes on, and I heard the bell already, and he talks about a lot of other things here. We've already gone further than the Sunday school calendar had us to. But look at what he says in verse number 44. He says, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. So when it comes to the church, we have a lot of opponents. A lot of those who would really just do away with church completely if they could. And we, a lot of times, want to go to war with them. But Jesus says, love them. Try to pray for them. Try to find a way to reach them. In verse number 46, he says, if you love them which love you, what reward have you? It's easy to love people that love you back, isn't it? But it's hard to love people who don't like you and who mistreat you. when we can do those things, like he's talked about here in chapter 5, when we can become that person that doesn't have the lust and the hate in our heart, not that we don't do it, but we don't think it. It's not who we are. It never crossed our mind to get revenge. Then we'll reflect our Father. Comments? Questions? He didn't lose it. It was controlled anger. That's right. He threw them out. But it was controlled. That's right. Amen. All right, let's take a break.